Chapter 20. In which Mr. Chevy Slime asserts the independence of his spirit, and the blue dragon loses a limb, Martin began to work at the grammar school next morning, with so much vigor and expedition, that Mr. Pinch had new reason to do homage to the natural endowments of that young gentleman, and to acknowledge his infinite superiority to himself. The new pupil received Tom's compliments very graciously, and having by this time conceived a real regard for him, in his own peculiar way, predicted that they would always be the very best of friends, and that neither of them, he was certain, but particularly Tom, would ever have reason to regret the day on which they became acquainted. Mr. Pinch was delighted to hear him say this, and felt so much flattered by his kind assurances of friendship and protection, that he was at a loss how to express the pleasure they afforded him. And indeed it may be observed of this friendship, such as it was, that it had within it more likely materials of endurance than many a sworn brotherhood that has been rich in promise. For so long as the one party found a pleasure in patronizing, and the other in being patronized, which was in the very essence of their respective characters, it was of all possible events among the least probable that the twin demons, envy and pride, would ever arise between them. So in very many cases of friendship, or what passes for it, the old axiom is reversed, and like clings to unlike more than to like. They were both very busy on the afternoon succeeding the family's departure, Martin with the grammar school, and Tom in balancing certain receipts of rents, and deducting Mr. Pecksniff's commission from the same, in which abstruse employment he was much distracted by a habit his new friend had of whistling aloud while he was drawing, when they were not a little startled by the unexpected obtrusion into that sanctuary of genius, of a human head which, although a shaggy and somewhat alarming head in appearance, smiled affably upon them from the doorway, in a manner that was at once waggish, conciliatory, and expressive of approbation. "I am not industrious myself, gents both," apostrophe said the head, "but I know how to appreciate that quality in others. I wish I may turn gray and ugly, if it isn't in my opinion, next to genius, one of the very charmingest qualities of the human mind. Upon my soul, I am grateful to my friend Pecksniff for helping me to the contemplation of such a delicious picture as you present. You remind me of Whittington, afterwards thrice Lord Mayor of London. I give you my unsullied word of honor that you very strongly remind me of that historical character. You are a pair of Whittingtons, gents, without the cat, which is a most agreeable and blessed exception to me, for I am not attached to the feline species. My name is Tig. How do you do?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Martin looked to Mr. Pinch for an explanation, and Tom, who had never in his life set eyes on Mr. Tig before, looked to that gentleman himself. "Chevy Slime?" apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Tig, interrogatively, and kissing his left hand in token of friendship. "You will understand me when I say that I am the accredited agent of Chevy Slime, that I am the ambassador from the court of Chiv? Ha ha! Apostrophe, heyday!" apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Martin, starting at the mention of a name he knew. "Pray, what does he want with me?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, if your name is Pinch," Mr. Tig began. "It is not," said Martin, checking himself. "That is Mr. Pinch." "Apostrophe, if that is Mr. Pinch," apostrophe, cried Tig, kissing his hand again, and beginning to follow his head into the room, "he will permit me to say that I greatly esteem and respect his character, which has been most highly commended to me by my friend Pecksniff, and that I deeply appreciate his talent for the organ, notwithstanding that I do not, if I may use the expression, grind myself. If that is Mr. Pinch, I will venture to express a hope that I see him well, and that he is suffering no inconvenience from the easterly wind?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank you," apostrophe, said Tom. "I am very well." "Apostrophe, that is a comfort," apostrophe, Mr. Tig rejoined. Then, apostrophe he added, shielding his lips with the palm of his hand, and applying them close to Mr. Pinch's ear, I have come for the letter. Apostrophe, for the letter, apostrophe, said Tom, aloud. What letter? Apostrophe, the letter, apostrophe, whispered Tig in the same cautious manner as before, which my friend Pecksniff addressed to Chevy Slime Esquire, and left with you. Apostrophe, he didn't leave any letter with me, apostrophe, said Tom. Hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the other. It's all the same thing, though not so delicately done by my friend Pecksniff as I could have wished. The money. Apostrophe, the money. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tom, quite scared. Exactly so, apostrophe, said Mr. Tig. With which he rapped Tom twice or thrice upon the breast, and nodded several times, as though he would say, that he saw they understood each other, that it was unnecessary to mention the circumstance before a third person, and that he would take it as a particular favor, if Tom would slip the amount into his hand, as quietly as possible. Mr. Pinch, however, was so very much astounded by this, to him, inexplicable deportment, that he at once openly declared there must be some mistake, and that he had been entrusted with no commission, whatever having any reference to Mr. Tig, or to his friend either. Mr. Tig received this declaration with a grave request that Mr. Pinch would have the goodness to make it again. And on Tom's repeating it in a still more emphatic and unmistakable manner, checked it off, sentence for sentence, by nodding his head solemnly at the end of each. When it had come to a close for the second time, Mr. Tick sat himself down in a chair, and addressed the young men as follows. Then I tell you what it is, gents both. There is at this present moment in this very place, a perfect constellation of talent and genius, who is involved, through what I cannot but designate as the culpable negligence of my friend Pecksniff, in a situation as tremendous, perhaps, as the social intercourse of the 19th century will readily admit of. There is actually at this instant, at the Blue Dragon in this village an alehouse, observe, a common, paltry, low-minded, clod-hopping, pipe-smoking alehouse, an individual, of whom it may be said, in the language of the poet, that nobody but himself can in any way come up to him, who is detained there for his bill. Ha! Ha! For his bill. I repeat it, for his bill. Now, apostrophe, said Mr. Tig, we have heard of Fox's Book of Martyrs, I believe, and we have heard of the Court of Requests, and the Star Chamber. But I fear the contradiction of no man alive or dead, when I assert that my friend Chevy Slime, being held in pawn for a bill, beats any amount of cockfighting with which I am acquainted. Apostrophe, Martin and Mr. Pinch looked, first at each other, and afterwards at Mr. Tig, who with his arms folded on his breast surveyed them, half in despondency and half in bitterness. Don't mistake me, gents both. Apostrophe, he said, stretching forth his right hand. If it had been for anything but a bill, I could have borne it, and could still have looked upon mankind with some feeling of respect. But when such a man as my friend Slime is detained for a score, a thing in itself essentially mean, a low performance on the slate, or possibly chalked upon the back of a door, I do feel that there is a screw of such magnitude loose somewhere, that the whole framework of society is shaken, and the very first principles of things can no longer be trusted. In short, gents both, apostrophe, said Mr. Tig with a passionate flourish of his hands and head, when a man like Slime is detained for such a thing as a bill, I reject the superstitions of ages, and believe nothing. I don't even believe that I don't believe, curse me if I do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am very sorry, I am sure, apostrophe, said Tom after a pause, but Mr. Pecksniff said nothing to me about it, and I couldn't act without his instructions. Wouldn't it be better, sir, if you were to go to wherever you came from yourself, and remit the money to your friend? Apostrophe, apostrophe, how can that be done, when I am detained also? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Tig. and when moreover, owing to the astounding, and I must add, guilty negligence of my friend Pecksniff, I have no money for coach hire. Tom thought of reminding the gentleman, who, no doubt, in his agitation had forgotten it, that there was a post office in the land, and that possibly, if he wrote to some friend or agent for a remittance, it might not be lost upon the road, or at all events that the chance, however desperate, was worth trusting to. But, as his good nature presently suggested to him certain reasons for abstaining from this hint, he paused again, and then asked, "Did you say, sir, that you were detained also?" "Come here," said Mr. Tigg, rising. "You have no objection to my opening this window for a moment?"
"Certainly not," said Tom.
"Very good," said Mr. Tigg, lifting the sash. "You see a fellow down there in a red neckcloth and no waistcoat?"
"Of course I do," cried Tom. "That's Mark Tapley."
"Mark Tapley, is it?" said the gentleman. Then Mark Tapley had not only the great politeness to follow me to this house, but is waiting now to see me home again. "And for that attention, sir," added Mr. Tigg, stroking his mustache, "I can tell you that Mark Tapley had better in his infancy have been fed to suffocation by Mrs. Tapley than preserved to this time."
Mr. Pinch was not so dismayed by this terrible threat, but that he had voice enough to call to Mark to come in, and upstairs, a summons which he so speedily obeyed, that almost as soon as Tom and Mr. Tigg had drawn in their heads, and closed the window again, he, the denounced, appeared before them.
"Come here, Mark," said Mr. Pinch. "Good gracious me! What's the matter between Mrs. Lupin and this gentleman?"
"What gentleman, sir?"
said Mark. "I don't see no gentleman here, sir, excepting you and the new gentleman," to whom he made a rough kind of bow, "and there's nothing wrong between Mrs. Lupin and either of you, Mr. Pinch, I am sure."
"Nonsense, Mark," cried Tom.
"You see, Mr. Tig," interposed that gentleman.
"Wait a bit. I shall crush him soon. All in good time."
Rejoined Mark, with an air of careless defiance.
"Yes, I see him. I could see him a little better if he'd shave himself and get his hair cut."
Mr. Tick shook his head with a ferocious look, and smote himself once upon the breast.
"It's no use," said Mark. "If you knock ever so much in that quarter, you'll get no answer. I know better. There's nothing there but padding, and a greasy sort it is."
Mark, urged Mr. Pinch, interposing to prevent hostilities, "tell me what I ask you. You're not out of temper, I hope?"
"Out of temper, sir?"
cried Mark, with a grin. "Why no, sir. There's a little credit, not much, in being jolly, when such fellows as him is a going about like roaring lions, if there is any breed of lions, at least, as is all roar and mane.
What is there between him and Mrs. Lupin, sir?"
"Why, there's a score between him and Mrs. Lupin. And I think Mrs. Lupin lets him and his friend off very easy in not charging him double prices for being a disgrace to the Dragon. That's my opinion. I wouldn't have any such Peter the Wild Boy as him in my house, sir, not if I was paid race week prices for it. He's enough to turn the very beer in the cask sour with his looks, he is. So he would, if it had judgment enough."
"You're not answering my question, you know, Mark," observed Mr. Pinch.
"Well, sir," said Mark, "I don't know as there's much to answer further than that. Him and his friend goes and stops at the Moon and Stars till they run a bill there, and then comes and stops with us and does the same. The running of bills is common enough, Mr. Pinch,
It ain't that as we object to. It's the ways of this chap. Nothing's good enough for him. All the women is dying for him, he thinks, and is overpaid, if he winks at them. And all the men was made to be ordered about by him. This not being aggravation enough, he says this morning to me, in his usual captivating way, "We're going tonight, my man." "Are you, sir?" says one. "Perhaps you'd like the bill got ready, sir?" "Oh no, my man," he says, "you needn't mind that. I'll give Pecksniff orders to see to that." In reply to which, the dragon makes answer, "Thank ye, sir, you're very kind to honor us so far, but as we don't know any particular good of you, and you don't travel with luggage, and Mr. Pecksniff and at home, which perhaps you mayn't happen to be aware of, sir, we should prefer something more satisfactory, and that's where the matter stands." "And I ask," said Mr. Tapley, pointing, in conclusion, to Mr. Tigg, with his hat, "any lady or gentleman, possessing ordinary strength of mind, to say whether he's a disagreeable-looking chap or not." "Let me inquire," said Martin, interposing between this candid speech and the delivery of some blighting anathema by Mr. Tigg, "what the amount of this debt may be." "In point of money, sir, very little," answered Mark. "Only just turned of £3. "But it ain't that. It's the yes, yes, you told us so before," said Martin. "Pinch, a word with you." "What is it?" Asked Tom, retiring with him to a corner of the room. "Why, simply I am ashamed to say that this Mr. Slime is a relation of mine, of whom I never heard anything pleasant, and that I don't want him here just now, and think he would be cheaply got rid of, perhaps, for £3 or £4. You haven't enough money to pay this bill, I suppose?" Tom shook his head to an extent that left no doubt of his entire sincerity. "That's unfortunate, for I am poor too, and in case you had had it, I'd have borrowed it of you. But if we told this landlady we would see her paid, I suppose that would answer the same purpose?" "Oh dear, yes." Said Tom. "She knows me, bless you." "Then let us go down at once, and tell her so, for the sooner we are rid of their company the better. As you have conducted the conversation with this gentleman hitherto, perhaps you will tell him what we purpose doing, will you?" Mr. Pinch, complying, at once imparted the intelligence to Mr. Tigg, who shook him warmly by the hand in return, assuring him that his faith in anything and everything was again restored. "It was not so much," he said, "for the temporary relief of this assistance, that he prized it, as for its vindication of the high principle that nature's knobs felt with nature's knobs, and that true greatness of soul sympathized with true greatness of soul, all the world over. It proved to him," he said, "that like him they admired genius, even when it was coupled with the alloy occasionally visible in the metal of his friend Slime, and on behalf of that friend, he thanked them, as warmly and heartily, as if the cause were his own." Being cut short in these speeches by a general move towards the stairs, he... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.